It's time for Twink This Week in Google. Stacey Higginbotham is here. Jeff Jarvis is back from Davos. We'll get a report from the World Economic Forum. We'll also talk, there's a lot of news, about Amazon getting into the healthcare business. Google adding a new local news feature for some of us. And what about all those fake followers on Twitter? Do you think reporters should be punished for buying followers? It's all coming up next on Twit.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 442, recorded Wednesday, January 31st, 2018. Queen of the Mole Rats. This Week in Google is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/twig. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, the show where we cover the latest from the Googleverse. Stacey Higginbotham is here, of course, from Stacey on IoT. She's an expert in all kinds of things, but IoT is her current beat. She does a podcast with Kevin Toefel there, and subscribe to her free newsletter. It's great. I read it every week. Hi, Stacey.
Hello.
Also with us, oh, and be nice to Stacey because she's off caffeine this week. So I won't tell you about the new espresso maker I got
she
in the studio.
Could get grumpy on us.
Hey, speaking of grumps, he's back from Davos, ladies and gentlemen. Jeff Jarvis, the ranter-in-chief, BuzzMachine.com, professor of journalism at the City University of New York in downtown Times Square. Great to have you, Jeff. How was Davos?
Davos was good. It's always a hoot. I'd say that...
What is Davos, before you say how it was for people?
The World Economic Forum is an organization that brings together leaders in, yes, business, also government, also NGOs and academe, and about, I think, 2,000 of them.
What's the goal?
And the goal is world peace and prosperity and trying to just it's very good at seriously, it's good at convening people. They call it multilateral discussions, but they convene people across constituencies, and you know you're in the room at the same time, and you have a little white badge.
Oh, let's see his Davos badge. This makes Davos you one of the machers.
This is when you have the white badge, you're special.
Oh, that means you're so giving us a panel.
This is the white badge.
Oh, it's so small.
It is. Actually, you know what? This is the best badge on earth. It never flips around.
Oh, I like it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's very simple. That's the Davos
It looks
badge.
Like one of those credit card size devices, you know, badges you use tap doors with to get in.
It's like you tap all the time for security.
Oh, that's why.
Heavy security.
Yeah, heavy security. And anyway, so, you know, Facebook builds its own temporary building. In Davos.
Oh, jeez. But that's probably they amazing. Have to, because they probably bring half the company out there.
They bring a fair number of people. Google doesn't do that, but Google has some sessions here and there. And all of the businesses in downtown Davos is not a high level resort. I mean, the fanciest hotel in town just about is the Hilton Garden Inn.
Oh God,
a few better than that up the mountain. But all the businesses basically leave, and companies take over their spaces.
Oh, that's cute.
So well, you can be like, there's a great coffee shop. You can't. No, you're not. They just empty everything out of it.
Oh.
And suddenly it is, you know, Swiss Re's space or some such thing.
It sounds like something I don't think Stacey and I would enjoy at all.
No, it's exhausting. I would leave by 6 or 6:30 in the morning and get back at – this time I didn't do any parties.
And what do you go for? I mean, besides the honor of being asked, what do you get from it?
I get to have meetings with a lot of people in one place. I mean, it's really useful for that. In this case, there were a lot with Facebook and Google, but also across journalism. I'm a member of the International Media Council, so we have sessions with media on our problems. And so it's good for me to be there as a professional blatherer among them. It's worthwhile.
It's reviled by some because kind of like the Bohemian
it's the
Grove. It's, you know, 1% of the 1%.
So the funny thing was, normally there's lounges. There's the partner lounge where if you pay the full amount, you get this partner lounge and there's food there that you can't believe. I got to go one meeting in there and let me in. Right. Then there was another lounge where anybody could go in. You could get a nice little glass of orange juice or a little tiny cheese sandwich. Right. This year I wasn't allowed in.
Oh.
I'm not of the polloi. So I felt like I was the 99%.
Wait a minute. You're too elite to get into the sandwich place?
No, I was not elite enough to get into the sandwich
place. Oh, okay.
I'm the 99% of the 1%.
The polloi are the people.
Oh, yes.
Hoi polloi.
Hoi polloi means the people, polloi, not the fancy folk, just the people.
I wasn't.
So you were neither nor.
Yeah, how many women were there this time?
Good 20-some percent. Not, it goes up bit by bit, but not nearly enough. It is not a diverse crowd. The way it works is the companies pay a fortune. They pay $500,000 plus to go, and the forum will require them to have women in their delegation, but they shouldn't have to require it, number one, and it should be a higher number than that, number two.
Wow.
Well, but I'm back. I fell. It was over freezing the whole day. They got a huge amount of snow, and they don't really plow the streets there. They just kind of rough up the ice. So when I got there, the first time I got there, it was raining on top of ice, and I'm a clumsy guy, and I had my new Uggs on. Yes, I bought Uggs, and I fell badly.
At least it wasn't Crocs. It sounds like Davos is like the bad side of Switzerland. They rough up the ice there. What the?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. Well,
that's it for my Davos report.
That's the Davos report, ladies.
One interesting thing that was there of note, it always opens every year now the last 18 years with the Edelman Trust Barometer. And you probably saw some reports on this, but it's devastating news for institutions. Media is the lowest trusted institution on earth now. One half of the people, the 33,000 surveyed around the world in 28 countries, do not even come to mainstream media at all.
Not just in the U.S., but around the world.
Around the world, yeah. So it's
that's really surprising.
There was a fall in trust. They survey trust in government, business, NGOs, and media. And I would add a fifth institution, which is people like me. I don't mean like me. I mean people like
Undis?
Us.
Professional blathers?
No. I mean no. People like you, or you, or you, or you. People who quote unquote like me. And there's some rise in expertise.
I'm looking at it right now. It does say that the 2018 barometer has a 5-point rise for journalism.
But rise against platforms in that category. Media was still rock bottom. It was bad news for media all around. Platforms was very
even
bad
worse.
News.
So it's worse for Facebook than media, but in both cases, they're not doing great.
Yes. So that led to kind of the tone of the whole week. But then when Trump arrived, basically, give them a tax cut and they'll let you shoot somebody on the promenade. You know,
it was a love fest for the press.
Well, I wouldn't go quite that far, but yeah, in his talk, which I chose not to attend. He got booed once when he did his fake news thing. The execs were there. I went to
Do you think that he and the whole fake news thing are to blame for the, for falling trust in journalism? Yeah. It sounds like it's been that way for a while, though.
Well, trust has been going down on journalism since the 70s. But yeah, I think it's
why
had an impact.
Is that? I don't understand why. I mean, more people should go see the
Fox
Post.
I think it's actually Fox News. I think because dad's had less. He's had less faith in the mainstream media because Fox reports things truthfully in a way. So I think it's kind of the partisanship of news, if that makes sense.
And I think I think cable news in general has lowered the esteem of news. But gosh, that's so disappointing because I feel like that's bad because if you want to be, and I think, we try to consider ourselves a trusted source for information. If you're trying to be a trusted source for information, it's very disappointing that people are not trusting you. Where are you going to get your information from if you don't trust?
They trust you when they want to, which is really distressing. Like, I have people who rely on me as an expert in things that I'm an expert in. And then in that same area, if I report on something, and this is something as silly as like a radio protocol, if all of a sudden I'm like, guys, I'm not that sold on Bluetooth mesh. I've had people tell me that, well, that's inaccurate. Your reporting's all wrong. You're very biased. Biased for Wi-Fi? I mean, No.
So there's just the presumption that everybody's got an axe to grind.
Yes. And if you don't agree with, if they don't agree with you, you must be grinding your axe.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
You recommended to me, Jeff, Kurt Anderson's book, Fantasyland, which I'm in the middle
did
of.
Did I?
Did you not?
I don't know. I think it was somebody else. I haven't read it yet.
Oh, it's quite good. It's basically about that. But I think his premise is false. I'm going to disagree with him because he says this fake. First of all, he says fake news is 400 years old. It's as old as America. But in fact, if you read his book, you would come to the conclusion, well, actually, it long predates America. Fake news is a human condition. Going back. I mean, he talks about Protestantism being an important transition point, and especially for Americans, because of course we were born as a Puritan Protestant nation, because it for the first time ever said it's not the experts that tell you what to believe, you get to decide. It's your faith that matters, not the Pope. Which okay, but honestly, people who believe the Pope are not any less engaged in, you know, phantasmical thinking. So his premise kind of defeats his own premise in the very first pages by describing this transition as if it's somehow people went from being, you know, hard thinkers to serious to fantasy people. No, it comes back a long way.
Oh, it does. But
it's a very interesting thing. I mean, in other words, the this fake news thing is not new. There's certainly a real partisanship in the United States that we've never seen before. Well, look at this pile of books. Is it in there?
So a pile of books. Yeah, I'm researching again.
Holy cow.
So I'm trying to figure out, you know, this notion of the death of the mass. And so it leads you to think about how we saw information society. And I'm reading Dewey and Lippmann and all kinds of people on this.
Yeah.
Now, it is fascinating. It is.
And Berzon's propaganda, right? Isn't that
exactly? Well, that's Bernays's propaganda, and then it's Le Bon's The Crowd.
Yeah.
He hated it. So it's very much about elitism and the notion of the individual rising. And no, it all fits in of a piece. But I do think that we're in a markedly different time now because of the net.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm...
Although, as somebody in the chat room, RF2020, is saying, the polarization that's occurring in political journalism doesn't seem to be happening in tech journalism. Stacey, you're an example notwithstanding. I don't think...
Except Apple fanboys versus the world.
Well, that's always been the case, but yeah, I guess you're right. You can be accused of being a... Yeah, okay, never mind. It's the way it is in the world. How about this? This is, I thought... one of the least underreported and I thought most interesting stories of the week. Amazon is partnering with Berkshire Hathaway and Chase to create their own health care. JP Morgan to create its own health care it says for its employees, right? They're going to be three corporate behemoths. This is the New York Times. Amazon, Berkshire Hathaway, and JP Morgan Chase announced on Tuesday they'd form an independent healthcare company for their employees in the U.S. However, I have to think, I mean, putting myself in Jeff Bezos' shoes, that he's going to use his employees as a test tube for a product, which I shall call, for want of a better name, Amazon Health.
Prime of your life.
Prime of your life. I like it.
We've just created the whole marketing campaign.
So $99 Stacey,
a year, you get Amazon Prime and healthcare.
And eternal life. You can pay forever. Sorry, Stacey. Couldn't resist the punchline.
I'm like, you guys get excited.
I'm done.
I'm too uncaffeinated to get too excited right now.
Yes. We've got to slow the Stacey speed today.
Yes. I thought it was... awesome in the sense like we are clearly hitting an intractable place with healthcare and pharma drugs. And it actually reminded me of the story about four major U.S. hospital systems creating their own drug company. Right. I don't know if you guys saw that a couple weeks ago.
Right.
So I looked at this as an extension of, oh my God, our healthcare system is so screwed up. How can we solve this problem? Even if it's just for ourselves, I'm sure it will go beyond that. But
I think what you're going to see is technologists and the arrogance of their ways saying the whole government in general is failing us and we're going to replace government.
Well, you know, in some ways they kind of have.
Yeah, we're already a good way down that road.
In fact, Stacey, the trust barometer thing says, you know, businesses are now more trusted than government in the world. And Edelman was arguing the government should lead. Usually I'm the optimist here, right? My first reaction was optimism. My second reaction was a slight this could be a Mondo cost-cutting thing. And what if the healthcare isn't very good and you're stuck with it and it's the only option?
Well, I think there's a lot of things to think about. So tech companies have been wanting to get into healthcare since at least I remember being in the audience at like the World Council on IT in 2004 or 2005. And I think it was Paul Otellini, I think was the CEO then of Intel, getting up there and just talking about telehealth and it was going to be amazing. And, you know, what are we, 13 years later? And we still, telehealth programs exist, but they're still controversial. They're still difficult to measure. And even things like progress such as EHRs, electronic health records, are a wretched mess because the software is proprietary. You right. can't, the Epic, the companies that are part of this are hugely expensive. There's so much waste in part because it's so highly regulated. And these guys coming in are not going to change the fact that healthcare is still incredibly regulated. So the question is, can they achieve efficiencies by not going around the regulation, but working within those regulations? And heck, if they can, God, more power to them.
I think what happened in that era was a land grab because, well, it maybe didn't start in 2004, but Obama early on said we're going to move health records electronic. And there was a big opportunity there. I think many companies, Intel included, said,
And Google. Google was going to go big.
Google had Google Health. Yeah. Microsoft had Microsoft Health. Mm-hmm. But I think that was a response to a market opportunity, which was, we've got all these, you know, health providers, and they need to all, because it was a mandate, they need to all move to electronic records. And, yeah, it was a mess. But I don't think it was – I think this might be a little different. This – I feel there – it goes in the pile of stories we have about Mark Zuckerberg running for president and Silicon Valley's arrogance.
Or Silicon Valley's ability to improve the world.
Well, they certainly feel that that's their ability, right? Yes. And I think that they're looking at government saying, all right, government's failing. And I think healthcare, I mean, this is a lot of projection because it could just be Amazon, Berkshire Hathaway, and JP Morgan trying to cut healthcare costs by doing it themselves. That's how Kaiser started, by the way. Kaiser, which is our big HMO on the West Coast, was created by Kaiser Aluminum as a healthcare system for its employees. It went public later.
Which is the model for this thing, by the way. Kaiser is supposed to be the model for this.
Interesting.
I think this isn't a let's solve healthcare writ large. I think this is let's solve healthcare for us and see what we can learn.
Because it's a cost. And we know that Bezos is really interested in reducing costs.
Which is what gives me a little bit of concern. About that. But I think it's too public and too trumpeted. If they wanted to just do it to cut costs, then it might be differently. So I put in the rundown, I put in four stories this week, and I had a couple more that were related to Google and health. And they're starting to bubble up again. The most sobering, I think, was that Google AI predicting hospital deaths.
Yeah.
And first that was, I was like, the death panel. I'm sorry, sir, but you had a 95% of cranking, so we're not doing crap for you. But supposedly it's the opposite. It's, we can predict the death so we can forestall.
Yeah, this is AI. This is Google applying AI to every possible thing from growing potatoes to killing people in hospitals. This is you're going to see a lot of this. I mean, this is going to be the trend for the next many decades is how do you apply big data and AI? And where do you have a lot of data? Well, things like hospitals,
you know,
records. Yeah.
Right. And you have the other important element to that is you have the results. So you have all the incoming data and then you know what happened. That's a big deal when you're working with data.
You know what, Stacey? So I've had my two cancer surgeries and actually the hospital didn't find the results from me. They didn't really ask. They don't know what works and what doesn't work.
Yeah.
which I find
shocking. We got to fix that. Yeah.
Whereas you're right, in a hospital, you at least have the, you know, did someone die, leave on foot or in box? That's a data point you can actually draw. Yes.
Then so you have to combine government regulation, like HIPAA particularly. In fact, one of the things Amazon did that was a red flag was they hired a HIPAA expert. So that's one. But then there's that. But there's also FDA. This is all very complicated. And then there's the individual's concern for privacy. A lot of people, well, I think one of the reasons Google Health failed was not because it wasn't a good idea, but because people were concerned about privacy. Interestingly, Apple,
Apple is doing their health
increasingly
stuff
positioning itself as the privacy company, right? So maybe you trust them.
They just did an update where they were adding more something
Apple
to their
health. Their health app is going to be able to import your
electronic records. Health record.
Yeah.
That's it.
Which is great.
I was like looking that up.
Isn't that a great idea?
It is.
Because then instead of, so I'm on Kaiser. So Kaiser has an app and I can look up my health record. It is available to me on my phone. But for people who can't do that, having that in the, and actually I would like to have it in Apple Health because then I can cross reference it to other things Apple Health records.
So then there's also this story I put up somewhere. I know.
The question on this Apple thing is, did Google's fail because it was Google? And is Apple going to succeed because it's Apple and people trust Apple?
I think that's not just trust. Here's the other thing that you should think about. Healthcare is inordinately complicated.
Yes.
And
Apple's notoriously bad at this stuff, by the way.
Yes. Well, but it does think about the overarching user experience.
Right.
In a way that Google, my God, never seems to actually do. So I think that Apple... How many messaging platforms are there? How do I call you, Jeff? Should I call you on Duo? Should I call you on Hangout?
But Apple can't help.
All right.
I mean, for all that, Apple is terrible at network services. Terrible.
They are. Their cloud is terrible, but that's actually probably good in this case. If they can create an experience around your health data, and they're very clear to talk about it in reference and advertise and market about it to you. It's not to your doctor. They are doing the partnership with Aetna, but their advertising is all about giving you this information.
Right. Yes, and people think of Apple as a privacy-focused company instead of Google as an advertising-focused company. Right?
I don't know.
That's a bug made into a feature.
Yeah, I don't know if it's true
Apple
either.
Apple failed with the ad business, thus can't use the data, thus decided that they turned that into a feature. I don't know that Apple is so virtuous as this would make it seem.
My instinct is that they are not, but I don't have any evidence to prove otherwise.
So there's also, I put up on the rundown, Google's Verily started a project.
That's their life sciences alphabet.
Is this the naked mole rats?
No, this is not the naked mole rats.
God bless the naked mole rat.
Okay.
So this is fascinating. So this is, they're going to get 10,000 people. It's like that project that was done years ago of tracking people's health. So they're going to do 10,000 people over 5 years from young adult to in the box. And they have their own watch to wear to track you across all of these areas. It's the kind of thing that Leo and I would sign up for in a second.
Not me, no.
No? Even you would not sign up for this?
No.
No?
No. Even I wouldn't trust this information to Google. I wear an Apple Watch, baby. I trust
Apple.
Although
this is a specific health project.
Yeah.
You are. It's
if
not,
Apple
it's not a
does it, I'll do
like
it.
Like the Framingham study.
Yeah.
It's a Framingham study. So, yeah, so the watch is
it's
not
a longitudinal
a consumer
study.
Product.
I understand.
It is a longitudinal study.
But why Google? Why is Google doing this? It's not really Google. It's Verily.
Oh, you changed it. A year ago, you would have jumped on this. You would have said, where do I sign
up? I am much
up?
More cynical about Facebook and Google than I used to be.
And well, tell me about it. I know you are.
I know. And I'm a little on the fence on Apple, but if I'm going to choose one, I would choose Apple over. Look at Microsoft. This cracks me up. Microsoft also did, like Google, Microsoft Health. And it's still alive, unlike Google. They haven't killed it. Except if you scroll down, they show the Windows Phone app and the Microsoft Band app, both of which are dead products. So now I'm thinking maybe Microsoft Health isn't a primary focus. I don't even know why this website's still up. They don't make this stuff anymore.
Wow.
So
is the health vault still up?
I was like, a health vault might still, I think they have deal. Don't they have deals with some hospitals in,
yeah,
to put cancer data in the cloud? I think,
yeah,
they have a partnership.
So I, you know, I think that goes back to the land grab when electronic health records became the mandate. And I think all of these initiatives do. I think that's different from what Amazon's doing. My gut is Amazon. By the way, the press release said they're forming an independent company that is free from profit-making incentives and constraints.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Not nonprofit. Just free from profit-making incentives and constraints.
You know,
although that is part of the problem
that
with
Amazon
the health.
Amazon does that.
Yeah, right. They're free from profit. Yeah, free from profit constraints. There's a distinction, as Fortune points out, between free from the necessity to turn a profit and nonprofit. I could absolutely see Amazon doing its own health thing. Starting.
Now, how do you feel about your company knowing all, your employer knowing everything?
Yeah, no.
Well, this is a separate company. They're creating a separate company, and your employer already pays for your health care.
Yeah, but we don't know anything about our employees' health.
But remember Tim, what's his name? AOL dude, can't think of his last name right now, who did on his earnings call, our earnings were hit in part from health expenses. Yeah. Remember
that's
the baby?
Right.
One of our employees had a sick baby.
Yeah.
And everyone was like,
yeah.
So they don't know details, but they can piece together some things if you're an outlier.
My experience, and I may not be universal. My experience is the insurer won't tell you why the rates went up. You have to make that leap.
Yes,
but your rates are going up all the time anyway.
It depends on whether you're self-insured. Because what?
No, I'm saying as an employer.
No, even so, I know that you're not buying it. In one company I worked for, we weren't buying any insurance. We were paying the direct costs through. The insurer wasn't really an insurer. The insurer was just an accountant.
Yeah, no, we don't do it that way. We have health plans through like Blue Shield and Kaiser and stuff that we.
Right.
And so we will know that our rates have gone up. And you could say, well, it must be because he was sick. But I'm sorry, Tim, you don't know that that's the fact. It might just be your rates went up.
Yeah, the rates are going up for everybody.
Right. Yeah, Tim Armstrong. That's what. Yeah. Okay. Contrast that big business taking over government with the notion that government might take over the 5G network.
Okay, this is just such a stupid story. I'm just going on the record. The guy who, this isn't even a trial balloon. I think this came out because somebody in national security was like, oh, this would be a great idea.
It is a great idea.
It is a terrible idea.
Oh, it's a terrible, terrible idea.
So this was a PowerPoint presentation, not even a recent PowerPoint presentation, apparently, from national security officials who said, you know, because of the threat of China spying on us, the U.S. government should build the 5G networks, not let the telcos do it, and then lease those lines to telcos so that we can make sure it's secure.
So here's my tweet about
What's wrong with that?
To protect America from China, America builds a Chinese internet.
It's not a Chinese internet. Here's we had a great conversation about this before the story broke, oddly enough, on Twitter on Sunday, in which it was, I think, concluded that the correct solution to preserving net neutrality in the United States would be, just like the interstate highway system, for the government to build the infrastructure, whether it's local, state, or national, probably it'd have to be federal government, build the infrastructure, and then maintain it and probably even make a profit on it, leasing it to as many internet service providers as possible.
Okay.
Providing true competition. That's how many utilities. It's the way many utilities run. It's the way the interstate highway system runs, and it is the only way because telcos are never. It's not in their interest to preserve net neutrality, so that's the right way to do it. Unfortunately, we're stuck with landlines being, you know, the fiefdoms of telcos. Unless you're willing to do something politically very controversial, which is assert eminent domain and say, well, you made enough money on those lines. We want them now. I don't think
this administration isn't going to do it.
Well, any administration is not going to do it.
No, the British model, the difference.
It happens in other countries because they don't have any. Yes, just let me set it up and then you knock it down.
Okay.
This is Bolin for Leo. So it happens in other, it has happened in other countries because they don't have the same situation we do. It was built here and it was built piecemeal. They had the chance to build it right. It's too late to do it for landlines. What about letting, what about the government? 5G, I think you can make the argument 5G is ultimately going to replace terrestrial internet. If that's the case, what's wrong with having government build the 5G networks, provided there are, of course, you know, restrictions on what governments can do to watch the network and so forth. But the idea being, like the interstate highway system, they maintain it. Okay, now
wind
you may
up,
knock
wind
it down.
Up. Laporte pitches to Stacey.
Okay, landlines, which I think you're just mean broad, like wireline broadband.
Wireline broadband. Thank you.
Okay. So from that standpoint, ideally, way back in the day, we would have done conduit and everyone could run their own networks through it. That is the most fair, probably the most American way to do it, unless you're going to like be a socialized country, which I don't think we're ready for. With a 5G and a wireless network, there's a couple things. So are we talking about mobile 5G or fixed 5G? If we're talking about fixed, which is what we would look at for replacing wireline broadband, we would have to... You have to figure out at what layer you would give up control or the how far up the government would build. So in the case of 5G, a lot of that spectrum requires you to have line of sight or a close tower network, basically. So you're going to have fiber to it. So you could say the government could control that, but then they're going to take that fiber. Then you've got to say on people's rooftops, you're going to have a satellite or some sort of distribution mechanism to cover an area. And that becomes really questionable because if you're already like AT&T or Verizon, you already have those existing relationships in people's houses or on people's houses that you have access to, right? If the government comes in and wants to put a 5G satellite dish on your house to build this secure network, you're going to be like, what? Also, are they going to use eminent domain to put these towers up? And then for wireless spectrum, already they're starting to share some things, but
I don't know how making it, on that let's start on that one. I don't know how making it private makes that any easier. Government at least has rights of way. If you're doing private industry, then they've got the same issue. They've got to go and buy it from somebody's house. But, so the government already owns.
AT&T already has this stuff. AT&T already has a satellite permit. They have that. Oh God, is it Dish or is it Direct?
So let me divide the arguments. There's two arguments. There's two areas to argue on. You're arguing on the technical issues. There's also the argument that most people's reaction, which I think was both of your reaction, is, oh my God, don't let the government run the internet. So
no, that is not actually. So let's be clear. Running the internet is the government could do this. They would just have to set up rules in a way to do it
right.
That's normal. And the lack of technical expertise
every 5 miles.
Well, so AT&T already gives your data over to the government if the government knocks on their door and gives them a rose. So I'm not – that's kind of a naive assumption. The assumptions built into this presentation are just ludicrous. They don't explain anything. And to attack it at a technical level is where it needs to be attacked. This isn't just technical. This is also economic.
But we did this with the interstate highway system. Admittedly,
we did it when there was nothing.
Admittedly, there's no consensus for this. In fact, all five FCC commissioners, Democrat and Republican, have outright rejected this. So it's a non-starter. However, I think it's a damn good idea, and I think the technical issues can be solved.
It's the only way
to get to network neutrality. Frankly, you're never going to have.
That's not true.
Well, how are you going to get Sprint, AT&T, Verizon? And Comcast.
We regulate it. That's how you're going to get. We have given up the idea of a truly competitive broadband market.
Well, that's the mistake. We need to bring back competition.
Yes. Can I ask a question?
Sorry, Jeff.
So isn't it a hybrid in the UK, as I understand it, where basically the government paid BT to build the infrastructure, but then BT is required to enable anyone to use it?
And I also think BT was originally a governmental.
Originally, but I don't think by the time the internet was built, I don't think it was governmental anymore.
No, that's true. That is true, Jeff.
So is that a hybrid, Stacey, where you could...
Yeah, in a lot of countries, Australia has a hybrid situation.
They do.
But then Korea is all government run. I think Scandinavian countries, I think for the most part, the government runs the infrastructure.
On landlines, we actually used to have that sort of system where they could resell resell T1s and other switches and stuff. In AT&T and Verizon had to provide cabinet space, and you put your equipment there and you could run it over their lines. And I can't remember the name for that. We had it in Texas, and it was kind of a bit of a joke, because AT&T would never go out and fix the gear for other people. I can't remember what the model is called, what it was. Anyway, however, I don't think we should even be talking about it, because it's a dumb idea. If we want to talk about, I'm serious.
Let's talk about naked mole rats.
I don't think it's a dumb idea. I think it's a political non-starter, because both the left and the right hate it.
I think it's a unanimous. And it's a technical non-starter.
I don't think that's true.
So right now, to get fiber to all the places where we would need it to deliver this service, the government, if they really wanted their own 5G network, they would have to build that fiber out. So yeah, that's one. And that's a multi-billion-dollar thing.
Well, who's going to do that if not the government?
Okay, Verizon and AT&T already have fiber out to these
places.
There's
no incentive for them to increase bandwidth.
To do 5G?
There's no incentive for them to increase bandwidth.
That is not true at all. So fixed 5G, which both AT&T or Verizon are deploying, is more economical to them than fiber. So they are putting that out, because it is cheaper to do wireless, like fiber to a certain point, to back all those wireless networks. And they're also investing in
But one of the reasons we have so much dark fiber in this country, you acknowledge
that they're not using it.
And you know why they don't use it? Because they would prefer a scarcity. I'm telling you that the real problem in this country is that the people who run the telecommunications infrastructure have no incentive to provide us with good internet.
That's true, but that's something that can be, again, regulated. And it's also something that they're forced to do when innovations come along. So remember when AT&T brought in the iPhone and everybody's network sucked for forever, and then they fixed it? Apple pushed them to do that. We're pushing them to do that when we're putting cars on the road. And I know they have the absolute wrong mindset. I've written this story a million times. I look at the carriers and I just want to bang my head against the wall. I'm like, you could make so much more money if you invested in this network and had people become addicted to your product. Instead, you're making it scarce and it's annoying.
But none of that's happening. So I would submit that we have evidence that they
have much more capacity.
Yeah, but they're very tightly controlling that capacity to keep it from.
They are.
Yeah. They don't want as much.
But the government doesn't have to come in and do this. Other companies could come in and do this. There are definitely people who are looking. And when I talk to especially in smaller areas, not necessarily in urban areas, but in rural areas, in sub-rural, I don't know what to call them. Ex-urban areas, the local landline and broadband providers are concerned about upstarts coming in and doing 5G. So that's going to happen, although not in Boston, because Google just pulled out. So,
yeah, and Verizon stopped rolling out Fios. I mean, all of the evidence is contrary to that.
Verizon is adding fiber in neighborhoods where it's planning to do 5G.
Yes, in their interest.
Well, yeah. But that's going to be your broadband service. I don't understand.
Yeah, that's why you need it to be done in society's interest, not in corporate interest, because they will not do what you think they're going to do. They're going to tightly control it so that they can make it scarce, because that makes more. They're going to make more money on it that way.
Susan Crawford insists that wireless will never replace wireline, that the demand is going to keep going up at a pace such that we'll need fiber.
That's also a possibility. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
That's Shannon's law right there. Yeah, you can only cram so many bits per hertz.
Right, right. That may well be true. I mean, it's kind of an academic argument, because there's no way in hell this is going to happen. Although you can make, I think, some very good arguments that it should. The security argument was the one put forward by this old PowerPoint presentation. But there are, I think, good arguments in the public wheel that also support it, but it's a non-starter.
Ooh, so. The public wheel, that's fancy.
I know. Ooh. I like that word.
That's nice.
No one knows what it means. I like saying things no one knows what they mean, except Jeff, because he's a professor. Did you see Patrick Delahanty, our engineer, tweeted this out? I'm not sure, but I think Google's introducing a new search console based on the dozens of emails I've received. And Patrick, just so you know, I got them all too. Introducing the new search console. Yeah, this is for companies with websites.
Oh.
So I don't know what it means. I mean, I kind of know what it means. The search console is how you as a company with a website can control what Google see, you know, can let Google know, hey, here's the site map, here's, you know, and all of that stuff. It's a way for you to make your website work better. But Google really wants everybody to know about it. I'm just changing the subject because there's nothing more to say. It's not going to happen. So,
Naked mole rats.
What's the deal with naked? What's the deal with naked mole rats?
Naked roll mats and Google could
not
make your life.
Not naked roll mats. That's something else.
mole rats. Naked mole rats.
Naked mole
and
rats.
And Google can make your life longer.
So we know that naked mole rats are a wonderful thing to study. The heterocephalus globber, as it's known, or the sand puppy.
Ooh, very good. Wheel and that in the same 5 minutes.
It is a naked, sightless, disgusting animal. But for some reason, scientists keep wanting to study it. Is it their social organization?
In this case, they don't feel pain.
They don't actually live a long time because there's not eternal life, but they have like a little cap that protects their DNA.
Oh, a DNA cap.
A DNA condom.
So they also, as you said, lack pain. They don't have pain. They have very low metabolic and respiratory rates. You too could live like a naked mole rat. I'm not sure if I'd want to live longer. Their legs are thin and short. They can move backward as fast as they can move forward. Their large protruding teeth are used to dig, and their lips are sealed just behind the teeth so that their mouth doesn't get full of dirt.
How do they eat?
I don't know. I don't care. I really don't. So they can actually live in air that is only 5% oxygen for 5 hours.
And they can hold their breath for 18 minutes.
Naked roll mats. Naked mole rats on Mars. Naked Mars rats.
They have a high resistance to tumors.
Basically, it's the cap of their telomeres that we're excited about.
And we like their... Because we know that longer telomeres are good for longevity. Now, let's not get too excited. They live as long as 32 years.
Dude, there's a queen mole rat. And they're guarded by worker rats. I love this.
This you would love. I'll be your worker rat.
There's I want to be the queen of the mole rats.
Stacey, you are our queen mole rat.
Your queen mole rat. It is what they
all
call...
All hail, Stacey, the queen mole rat.
It's the first mammal. See, their ants and bees and stuff exhibit this eusociality, but it's the first mammal that they've ever found that does that. The queen and 1 to 3 males reproduce while the rest of the members of the colony just work. No sex for you. Work.
Dig. Dig.
Dig. Dig. Workers are sterile. What is it? Right. Telomeres? Right. They got a telomere cap? That's good.
They've got a cap. So basically, the idea is that protects their DNA from mutations and all kinds of other fun stuff. So Verily's like, hey, look, these animals, which are creepy weird, have this cool feature. So we're going to research that further. And that's the story.
The fact that Google does it just makes it more fun.
We learned a lot about naked mole rats, and I feel that that is always a worthwhile endeavor.
I take a highly overpriced supplement to it lengthen my telomeres.
Truly? Really?
Yeah. Okay. I don't know. I fell for this, and I don't know.
Was it a crowdfunding thing?
No, yeah, probably. It's called Elysium. From Basis, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
actually, it arrived. It's not a scam. I bought one, it arrived, and I said, no, I don't know. The FDA has not approved this.
And
no.
It's NAD. You want to increase your NAD plus. My NADs are plus. Size.
No, just stop right there.
Stop.
I'm pulling a punch.
NAD.
Right
no. NAD. NAD is vital to how cells use energy, a key player in metabolism. That's why I I feel so good. I spend $60 a month to take a supplement that nobody does even knows what it does.
All right.
All right. Google Chrome lets you permanently mute annoying websites again.
Don't annoy you. I'll be quiet. You don't have to. Don't mute us. No, please no.
Not you.
Wait,
don't worry.
What is new about this? I was confused by this. I'll be honest.
Well, they had it. No. I remember they had it, but I think they took it out, and now it's there. This replaces the previous mute tab feature that was only temporary. So you right-click the offending tab and mute the entire site, not just once, but forever. So believe me, I'll be doing that.
Yeah.
Google's also adding HDR support to Chrome 64 for Windows users if you have the Fall Creators Update and HDR-compatible monitor and graphics card. Also, this version of Chrome is patched to protect Windows and Mac users against Meltdown and Spectre. So update your Chrome. And I'm using Edge now because Chrome doesn't work on my Windows machine very well. HTC deal's done. The deal's done. Deal's done.
Yeah, this is bad news for Qualcomm, man.
Really, Qualcomm? That's interesting.
So
they're going to not use Qualcomm chips anymore?
Well, no. So their goal is to, the speculated goal, or maybe the stated goal, is to create an SoC for mobile phones.
Ooh.
And currently, in all of my mobile phones that run Android, I have Qualcomm.
Yeah. Although Apple's famously using a much worse Intel chip. Apple, though, is working very
Apple
hard.
Apple built their own
to replace their own. And it's not yet in the phones, but it will be any day now, probably the next generation phones. But they had a split, half Qualcomm, half Intel. In fact, Qualcomm sued them.
Oh, for the baseband.
For the baseband, yeah. And Qualcomm, remember Qualcomm sued them because they slowed down the Qualcomms because they were so much faster. And the Intels. So they just, Apple just slowed them down. So the HTC did not sell to Google. They just, for $1.1 billion, gave them 2,000 employees, which is about half of their R&D group, and about a fifth of its 10,000 employees. Yeah, but HTC says, that doesn't mean we're not making smartphones. We're just going to make it with half as many people.
I find that deal so weird.
It's so weird.
It is weird. It's very weird.
And how was the division done? Did they just say, okay, everybody with a last name beginning
with Rick.
A to Z, you go with Rick Osterloh, A to,
you
a
people,
to H.
You get free lunch? You don't. You get free lunch? You don't.
Maybe it's the firmware people. If Google's doing their own chips,
it must be divisions, like right? Apparently, these 2,000 HTC employees are the ones that made up the Pixel team inside of HTC.
Oh, well, then that's easy.
Yeah. So if you worked on the Pixel, so you're going to come with us.
Gee, I was there one day. I was in a meeting. Can I come too?
Yeah. HTC made the Pixel 2. LG made the Pixel 2 XL. So.
Oh, I had the Pixel. No, was it the Pixel 2?
The Pixel 2 and maybe even the
big one.
The original Pixel.
I had the original. No, the original Nexus.
No, yeah, yes. HTC made the original Nexus too. Yeah,
yeah.
In fact, HTC made the very first Android phone, which was that one with the slide out keyboard. Yeah.
Oh.
I have that somewhere in my
of course you do.
Museum.
So speaking of which, Leo, in the effort to always cost you more money,
yeah,
did you order a Google Clip?
I can't now. I saw the story that said
slow.
It's for sale now, and so I immediately went to store.google.com. Trying to buy a Google Clip. It's under accessories. This is the really silly device that, I mean.
It saved you from yourself.
It saved me from myself that you, oh, it's not here. Where is it? Wow, it's all the way over. Where's the clip?
Yeah, they know nobody
wants
it.
Maybe it's not in accessories. Maybe it's in home and entertainment. Maybe nobody wants it. Maybe that's the problem.
Yeah, they had 10 and they sold out.
They didn't have very many because when I went there, it said, the only option I had was to cancel my reservation. Oh, here it is, the Google Clip. So, see, leave waitlist is all I have up here. Did I not get there soon enough?
Maybe they just didn't want to give you one.
I can't imagine that. I think
not interested enough.
I think somebody at Android Central or whoever, 9to5 Google, got this invitation, but it wasn't universal, would be my guess. Anyway.
Speaking of invitations, guess what I got?
What?
An invite to customize my Tesla for delivery in 4 weeks.
Your Model 3.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's another thing that
before
was kind
the end of January.
Just kind of happened, and I was told by a number of people, just log into your Tesla to see Tesla
They
account.
Called me.
You got called. Some people got
you order a 3 also, Leo?
I put the deposit down, but my reservation number is in the high 100 millions. So I don't think I'm sure. No, it really is. Can I count?
So what are your
I can't
options,
remember.
Stacey?
Can I show
what do you get to customize?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it. I'm going to sign in and see here real quickly.
Okay. Yeah, let me go and sign in to my Tesla so I can tell you accurately.
Because I don't get that option. I'm jealous.
Let's make some choices.
But you're supposed. When did they say? When did you make your reservation?
The day of.
Yeah. See, I didn't do mine until much later.
So, okay.
Oh, you get priority as a result, hey?
Yeah.
Right.
They do it in order.
They told us it was going to be reservation holder.
So that means you could get when? When could you get your Tesla?
4 weeks from now. If I ordered it yesterday.
Would you? Are you?
My challenge here is, oh God, what if I ordered the Tesla? No, I didn't. I was like, oh my God, it's not showing the option.
Honey, it's coming.
Yeah, my reservation number is 109,091,575.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, so here are my options. I only get the option. Of the long range battery, but we knew that. And then the premium upgrades also come. So you don't get a choice here.
Yeah,
if
see,
you're
that's
part
why
of this
I'm,
first.
Yeah, exactly.
And coming soon will be the base 35K model, the standard, motor all wheel
yeah,
drive.
Yeah, see, I want that's, dual motor and I want a bigger battery.
Okay. So you're not.
I don't mind waiting. But when I put my money down, my $1,000 down, it said 12 to 18 months. But I don't want to be the first on my block to own a Model 3. And I would suggest you don't either.
I probably don't. Yeah. So my options are colors. So it's still, they add price, you know, black. I think black is included.
You could use my referral link and you could get a unlimited supercharging. Oh, no, that's with the new Model S. Never mind.
I feel like I have unlimited. Okay, so any color except black is going to cost you $1,000 more.
What? Black's okay then. Get black.
Oh, no, I want the blue.
So absurd.
It's amazing how he makes money, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then wheels, you can have the 19-inch sports wheels. That'll cost you an extra
$1,500. You don't want that.
No.
Let's see.
Really, this is Elon's upsell is all about putting a little more money in the till for the future.
Yeah. That's why he's selling flamethrowers.
Yeah, they upsell. Why is he selling flamethrowers? That's crazy.
Yeah, what is that?
California politician is outraged. Outraged, I say, at Elon Musk's terribly insensitive flamethrower.
I thought it was the Elon Musk joke account.
You don't really want an insensitive flamethrower.
No.
So it isn't a joke, and he sold quite a few. But it's legal, apparently, because it only shoots a flame 10 feet. If it's 10 feet or less,
I think
Elon,
3 feet, I thought.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's the point. If it's 10
that's
feet or
plenty.
Less, that seems plenty. It's really a blowtorch, not a flamethrower.
Flamethrowers are really hot, by the way. You can go to ranches in Texas and play with them because that's what people in Texas do. You can also drive tanks and shoot things. but if you actually play with a flamethrower, it is an uncomfortable experience, and I don't recommend it.
TechCrunch says he's sold 15,000 flamethrowers in the first few days. Netting $7.5 million for the boring.
Speaking of Silicon Valley hubris.
Well, I think that, you know, people are buying it. That's, I don't feel bad for him for that. I mean, he sold all those hats for like what, $1 million or 600. I mean, sure, whatever.
But that's kind of the same thing with
damage.
Having a blue Model 3. It's just a way of, I don't know. That's what the politician says. Pre-order. Let's see. Check out. That's it. There's not much choice on there. It comes, and there you go. Give us a credit card. That's it. $500. I'm not ordering one.
Thank you, Leo.
It seems like a very bad.
We have found your limit.
No, I'm not.
This is it.
Guaranteed to liven up any party. World's safest flamethrower. Fire extinguisher sold separately for exorbitant amounts of money. This is on the Boring Company's page. Taxes and shipping will be added at checkout. Additional customs fee may apply for international orders because of laws. International customers could receive a full refund if not happy with said fees. Before shipping, aspiring flamethrower aficionados will be sent a terms and conditions rhyme for review and acceptance. Start shipping in spring. May not be used on Boring Company decorative lacquered hay bales or Boring Company dockside munition warehouses. Silly. You know?
Yeah, it's fun.
They do offer a $30 fire extinguisher. Oh my God. It's so funny. Yeah, and they also offer a hat.
A lot of people bought the hat.
I think really, if you think that this is all a simulation, it really kind of raises the bar on things you can do. Like, what's it matter? It's just a game.
You know, people have made that argument about religion. Why keep this earth nice if, you know, you die and go to heaven?
Yeah, but, you know, right. Right. We atheists who are preserving the environment. Just want you to know. Good thank if that's
hug an atheist.
Hug
today.
An atheist. Thank an atheist. If that river is running clean next to you, thank an atheist.
Oh dear.
Let's see. I was very moved. Did you watch the Grammys on Sunday?
I did not.
I did not, but I think what you're about to show was moving, yeah.
So they did a very long song. Who was that was singing that song?
Oh, it doesn't it say so there?
There's an ad. No, but in the Grammy Awards ceremony itself, they had a song.
Oh.
Which was it was interesting because it was, I wish I could find that clip. Let me see if I can find it. It's probably illegal to
give play. Us a hint and we can help you.
Logic is the name of the song.
Logic.
1-800-273-8255.
Which is the suicide hotline number.
Right. And
during the, let me play a little bit of it. Probably only a small amount to avoid copyright. Oh, look, Google's now working. I can't play any video. So it was really kind of beautiful. Logic, closed out his performance with a plea to call of unity. Be not scared to use your voice, especially in instances like those when you have an opportunity. Stand and fight for those who are not weak and you have yet discovered the strength that the evil of this world has done its best to conceal. So here he is. And what's interesting is, I'm sorry, we have an ad. Sorry. Everybody's got to monetize. Place for shoes, hall trees, there we go. Is that it? That's the Wayfair ad.
Like that is the ad. Do Logic, I Don't Want to Die.
In any event, I was watching this and I liked the song and I could tell that they were, you know, something was going on because they kept showing this number, which is it's in the title of the song. Here you go. This is his acceptance.
Nas, Puff, you know? These guys showed me the game through their lyrics from close.
Wait a minute. No, this is Kendrick Lamar, isn't it?
Kendrick Lamar.
Thank you for nothing. Thanks for nothing, Time Magazine. Anyway, Logic. Here's Logic on... here's a still of Logic. And so they all were wearing sweatshirts with a number. It said, you know, don't be silent. You are not alone. It was really moving. And then the Google ad right after. After the song ended, they go to end a commercial and then the Google ad.
That's product placement to a good end.
Yeah, it was really beautiful. They unfortunately,
the Google ad?
Yeah, I will. They unfortunately, Logic's comments had to be bleeped by CBS. Black is beautiful, hate is ugly. Women are as precious as they are stronger than any man I've ever met. And unto them I say, tall. And crush all predators under the weight of your heart that is full of the love that will never take away from you. To all the beautiful countries filled with culture, diversity, and thousands of years of history, you are not bleep holes. It's really beautiful. So, let me find the Google ad because then it made sense. It made sense because I didn't really understand.
Says video on the right.
I kind of understood the idea that this was something. There was a reason for that phone number, But Google made it clear with the ad here. We'll do the really beautiful ad, I thought.
Yeah.
Which I can't play.
You're just a mess.
This blocker is working too dang well. Here we go. There's a donut. This must be another ad. An ad on the
ad? There were donuts in the ad.
Oh, there were donuts in the ad? Okay.
Sweet tooth from her.
Yeah, you got to back it up. Okay.
Yeah, there you go.
Here we go. The following are real people captured with the Google
this
Pixel 2. So
this is
initially I see this, I think, oh, this is a ad for the Google phone, the Pixel 2.
Sophia, the light of his life.
And they're beautiful pictures.
This is Lauren. And this is her new place, which will soon be crammed with all her friends. This is Steven. This is where he schools his military buddies. This is April.
There are donuts.
She got her sweet tooth from her dad.
Yeah.
This is Sprinkles. And this is Dee. This is her dream job.
But wait.
This is Cassie. These are her backup dancers.
So it's really
This is Mike. This is his weekly barbecue club. This is Alex with all the friends that'll like her post from Friday night. And this is the lifeline all these people bravely called to find hope. I finally want to be
alive. So there, these are all people called a suicide hotline.
Not every picture tells
the whole story. Really
moving. I mean,
question your lens.
Suicidepreventionlifeline.org. That was really, so it came right after the Logic performance, and it was really amazing. I really, that was the highlight of the Grammys as far as I was concerned.
So that song has been like in the top 10 for a
while.
Oh,
yeah. It's a huge hit. I knew, that's why I was puzzled, because I knew the song. And I said, what's with all the phone numbers? And it's part of the title of the song.
The song is actually called the phone number. Yeah.
Yeah. Isn't that great? Really.
Well, while we're on such plugs, I want to just mention. So when I was in Munich before Davos, I got to spend, run into the hall, in a long conversation with Rose McGowan, who, of course, fueled the Me Too movement.
Yes.
And Tuesday night, she had a new special out on E! And her book Brave is out. And I just wanted to plug both those things because I think she's doing amazing work about, as she calls him, the monster.
Yeah, very good. Let's see. Let me do a break and then we can do more stuff. You guys can pick your interests, the stories. Right. We've been jumping all over the place. But I thought that's a good place to take a break because that was a nice moment. And then we could talk about YouTube having malware in its ads. Now that we can bring it back to the real world. Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. One of the best lenders in the country is now making themselves, they're kissing up to us geeks. They're making themselves even more popular with Rocket Mortgage. So Quicken Loans, the number one in customer satisfaction for 8 years running, according to J.D. Power. 8 consecutive years from 2010 through last year. They'll get it again this year. 4 consecutive years for mortgage servicing, too. They're really a great company. Revitalizing Detroit. Dan Gilbert and his team are just great. And they, I think they understood that the loan approval process was kind of out of date. The idea of going to a bank and going to the attic and getting paperwork and, faxing stuff in. I mean, come on. So they realized it needed a kind of a technological revolution. That's why they created Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage is so cool. First of all, no more going to the bank, nor going to the attic. You can do everything on your computer or your laptop, on your tablet, or even on your phone. You just go to rocketmortgage.com/twig. Answer a few questions. You won't even have to look up the answers to, like your name, address, social security, and date of birth. And then, because they have trusted relationships with all the financial institutions you do business with your permission, they pull all that information, crunch the numbers, and based on your income, your assets, and your credit, they say, here's the loans you qualify for. Very transparently, this is what you qualify for. You pick the rate, the down payment, the term. You pick what you want. If you don't see anything you like, fine, no problem. But if you see something you like, you say, okay. And they say, approved. And all of that happened in a couple of minutes. A couple of minutes. Whether you're buying a new home or refinancing, this is the simplest, fastest, easiest way to do it. Even if you're not about to do that any minute now, or you're not at an open house at this very moment, go to rocketmortgage.com/twig and just set up the account so you'll be ready to go. Then it's even faster. Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Apply simply, you'll understand fully, and your mortgage confidently. RocketMortgage.com/twig, equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, and MLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030. RocketMortgage.com/twig. Great way to apply for a home loan. According to Ars Technica, we talked a little bit about this on Security Now. This is ridiculous. This is part of the problem in general with automated ad sales. Even YouTube now has had some ads, they say they're pulling them down, that have cryptocurrency miners built into the ad.
Jesus. All that brilliance to go to that ad end.
People took to social media sites as of Tuesday to complain their antivirus programs were detecting this code when they visited YouTube. Avast blocks crypto miners. Others do. So do many ad blocking sites like uBlock Origin and so forth. The ads on Trend Micro drive a threefold spike in web miner detections. They came from Google's DoubleClick ad platform. And they were being displayed to YouTube visitors in Japan, France, Taiwan, Italy, and Spain. This is a known thing that goes on, JavaScript that mines Monero. And the reason it works is because, you're not devoting a huge amount of power to it, but if they have millions of people doing it, there's a chance they're going to make some money in cryptocurrency.
So it's like SETI for your cryptocurrency.
Yeah, but you don't get the money.
Unwitting SETI.
Unwitting SETI. You know,
well, why isn't there a service that lets me, in fact, but rent my capacity and earn
some crypto pennies? There sort of is. CoinHive was the one that came up with this. And this was originally thought to be a system for monetizing websites, right? So, it would have to be done with full disclosure. You see, now when I try to go to CoinHive, my uBlock Origin, which is my... My ad blocker says this site is not secure. Do not go there. And that's what you want. And I would get the same thing if I were to see these ads. But I think the original way CoinHive positioned themselves was, oh, no, this is about monetizing websites legitimately. It's not. In fact, we're starting to see scripts that aren't just while you're on that site, but then install themselves and continue to run in the background using up to 80% of your CPU. Not good.
Not cool.
Google's pulling them down, of course. But this is the problem with automated stuff. In fact, did you see that Android, in the Android Play Store, what was the number? Google?
70,000? 700?
700,000.
I think it was, there may have been more zeros.
Apps that they had to pull off of Android, the Android Store this past year due to malware. That's crazy. Let me see if I can find it. 700,000 bad apps in 2017. 70% increase over 2016. Yeah. Not only did we remove bad apps, says Andrew Ahn, the product manager for Google Play, we were able to identify and act against them earlier. 99% of apps with abusive contents were identified and rejected before anyone could install them. That's good news. So they're using machine learning to identify PHAs, fuzz, potentially harmful applications. This is probably part of that Google Play Protect scanner.
Mm-hmm.
Still, kind of a shocking number. I mean, that's a lot of people making malicious apps.
There's a lot of demand for...
I'll bet a lot of it is automated. They're making apps.
Right.
On apps. One session I moderated in Davos was Ben Gurion University on crypto security. And what became apparent is it's going to be AI versus AI.
Yeah.
Right? You have AI defenses to find all the vulnerabilities and all the patterns. And you have AI
offenses.
War of the robots.
Yeah.
It is.
Silly me. I was in the beginning of 2017, I put that on one of my trends because, it's the beginning of the year you do your trend piece. So I was like, 2017, we're going to see bots fighting bots.
You were right.
But it was too early. We didn't really see anything big bubble up to the surface yet. So I'm still waiting, though.
But that's exactly
what's happening in crypto.
This just happened. 700,000 apps were found by machine learning powered scanning. In 2017. Okay. So I give you an A+ for that prediction.
Yes, you win that one.
All right.
Ding.
But it is scary, and it's interesting because eventually are they going to actually learn themselves? Actually, Quanta has a really interesting article about applying quantum computing to AI, which if you just want to blow your mind, you should read that. Because
we're also seeing how hard it is to really do quantum computing.
Yes, but we are getting better.
Someday, faster. Maybe. I wouldn't hold my breath.
I think it's coming. I mean, it's always hard at first, and then suddenly you're like, well, bam, we've done it. And then you iterate so much faster. So, oh my God, I just said the word iterate.
You want to be proactive about that.
I love this story, and it's the number one shared, and has nothing to do with our conversation here today, but it's the number
Peacocks on planes?
No, it's the number one shared story on Washington Post right now. I am thoroughly ashamed. British Lord resigns after arriving late to work.
Leo, you have to quit.
I would be in so much trouble. It took less than 60 seconds for Michael Bates to arrive late, apologize profusely, offer his resignation, and then leave the House of Lords today. I want to offer my sincere apologies to Baroness Lister for my discourtesy in not being in my place to answer her question on a very important matter at the beginning of questions. During the 5 years in which it's been my privilege to answer questions from this dispatcher box on behalf of the government, I've always believed we should rise to the highest possible standards of courtesy and respect in responding on behalf
of the
government.
Sounds just like our Congress.
To the legitimate. Yes, just like our Congress. I'm thoroughly ashamed at not being in my place, and therefore I shall be offering my resignation to the Prime Minister with immediate effect. I do apologize. And then leaves.
Witnessing an apology.
I don't. Witnessing an apology,
it's the apology
turned into a resignation in a matter of seconds was simply too much for Bates's stunned peers. In the dramatic video, other politicians can be heard exclaiming "No!" from their seats, while some laughed in disbelief. Other attempts to reach out and pull Bates back into the chamber. The Baroness said, "An apology from Lord Bates is perfectly sufficient. It was a minor discourtesy, which any of us can be guilty of on occasion." That's so funny.
Be in England.
Oh my God! You want to hear the? No, I already read it. It can only be.
Let's compare accents. Let's do it.
I'm working on my poncy British accent. Watching the Queen over and over. I mean, the Crown, over and over, and again. While you can't get autoplay video to stop, you can never get the video you want to play to start. Now that needs an apology. Sitting there spinning. Anyway, you heard it. You heard my interpretation. I did an interpretive reading. I loved it. The reason I was at the Washington Post is this story. Facebook has a messenger for kids, as you may know, designed for the under 13 set, although kids as young as preschoolers apparently you're using it. The Campaign for a Commercial-Free Childhood has signed a letter to Mark Zuckerberg that said, you need to stop this program. The signatories, which include Public Citizen and Common Sense Media, expressed concerns over boosting the screen time of young children and said this would interfere with crucial developmental skills, such as reading human emotions, delaying gratification, and engaging with the physical
books
world.
Books are terrible for young minds. We have far too many books.
You think it's
books
techno
will
panic?
Overload their, well, if it's done badly, no. But I remember my daughter when she was young was on a American Girl social network.
Yes,
highly tightly controlled.
Yes,
and when they killed it, it was horribly disappointing. She lost friends. They went up in smoke.
Yes,
and they were gone. I think that there is a way to do it. I understand all the issues. Believe me, I understand the issues. And believe me, I see the fears, and they should be regulated up the yin yang for young children. But I also see that in this world where we have play dates, you have to schedule and you don't just go out in the yard anymore, and we have more isolated children.
That's true.
I don't know that it's necessarily presumptively an awful thing. It depends on how it's done.
Stacey, do you let your daughter wander down the street to the five and dime on her own?
She can wander down the street to her friend's house.
Yeah.
I mean, I've let her do that for years.
It's nerve-wracking though, isn't it?
No. I mean, the risks of someone kidnapping her are pretty low. The risks of her falling and hurting herself are higher, but
yeah.
I'm sure people would help her. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know. I've never subscribed to that. And I will say I did let her. I convinced the neighbor next door to let her son go with my daughter down the street to this common area that they wooded common area to play in.
Yeah, which we all did when we were kids.
Yeah.
Back then.
And she was like, I don't know. I'm real nervous. I'm like, it's really safe. So she did it. And then they were back late. And then I sent Andrew down to find them. Cause it's like, oh my God.
Now I'm responsible.
This is all my fault. Oh. And we go down and they're picking up litter with their bare hands. And Andrew's like, oh.
They're beautiful, beautiful children.
Yes.
So.
Do you know the book Free Range Kids?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
An old friend of mine from the Daily News way back when. Do you subscribe to the thesis?
I do.
I
was a latchkey kid, and my daughter doesn't want to be as independent, so I kind of push her gently, but you know, it's hard. It's one thing if your kid like really wants to be a free range kid, and it's another thing if your kid's like, nope, I'm fine here.
I think that's partly because of all these screens and all of this stuff they can do without leaving the house. That's the point, really, is that...
No, she has limited screen time.
Okay. What does she do? She just plays with her dolls?
She stomps around on the roof.
she's doing right now.
She listens to Hamilton. She writes, nice. She writes stories.
Aww.
So she spends a lot of time. And she, her desk is behind me, and she works on stuff, scripts.
Aww. Nice.
I don't know. She's a kid. She's got her own world.
Yeah. That's nice. She's a free range kid. She just chooses to use
to the range, close,
range
to home.
Close to home. Facebook says it's going to push more local news stories into your news feed based on the geography of the clicks. What do you think of this, Jeff? This is yet another change to
So Facebook basically what happened? I don't know if we talked about this because I was gone last week. When they made the change, what I saw, and I had this conversation with Facebook people at CUNY, when I brought in somebody to talk to product development people, we asked them what's news. And Facebook saw the world in two buckets. There was social content on Facebook and there was public content. And everything was in public content. So when some of the stuff in public content got them in trouble, they threw out the whole bathtub. And with it went news. Mm-hmm. So as you know, they're pulling it back now bit by bit. They have this odd structure to survey a small number of people to find out what is widely trusted, and that stuff's starting to come back. And that's the obvious. The New York Times is going to be there. Yes, Fox News is going to be there, and others. And then they wanted to also put local in. Local is easy to put in. So it's geography. So they're putting that stuff in, which is fine. The hard part is going to be how do they put in foreign affairs or Twig or De Correspondent or these other things. And I'm trying to suggest some methodologies publicly to them and others about trust and distrust. And it's God's work to try to get them to promote more good and important news. But that's going to be very difficult, and I don't think it's going to be as easy as an algorithm. However, I'm glad to see that local news is getting promoted by Facebook in this way. And Google also has started its new thing called Bulletin in three cities where people, the hoi polloi, properly used this time, can contribute directly to the web without having a website. Local news, we'll see how that works. But the fact that local is coming up in their views, I think is a good thing.
Yeah, tell me about this bulletin thing. So right now you have to sign up for early access.
And it's Oakland and two other cities. I forget where they are.
So I wouldn't be accepted because they don't have Petaluma. Although Petaluma would be the perfect place to do it.
Would be.
As opposed to a big city where, I mean, I don't know. So it's an app. You put it on your phone.
Basically, rather than sharing something to Instagram, I think, you're sharing something in your town.
It's interesting. Nashville, Tennessee,
so is it
and Oakland, California.
Nextdoor?
Kind of. I think different in that it's not that Nextdoor is very closed on purpose. This is verified identity. It's just the people you choose to do who really do live next to you. I think it's broader than that, I think.
Nextdoor, I mean, I guess I'm in my neighborhood, but it's a pretty big community. I mean, there's like hundreds of people.
Well, they brought it in over the time. Originally, it was supposed to be like 75 to something like that. And then, in my neighborhood, I started during Hurricane Sandy, and there weren't enough people. So now, Nextdoor includes people who are 3 miles away, which is a little ridiculous. But
so I signed up just to see. At the end, they say, do you work in media? So I think I probably will be rejected.
You have cooties.
Maybe they'll trust you more.
Maybe that would be better if you...
Maybe.
So, but this is kind of what CNN did. Remember, you know, they decided all of a sudden all their news gathering would be by people with smartphones. And
was that iReport? Is that what it's called?
Yep.
Whatever happened to that?
It just died of death, like all these things die. Yeah.
Although they still, I mean,
you see
anytime anything
tweets.
Trends on Twitter, they,
right.
you know,
tweets.
Ask you for your
Twitter
video
handle.
Footage.
Yeah. Well, and I can think of things like, I remember the Miracle on the Hudson where Sully landed the airplane on the Hudson River. Mm-hmm. You know, the definitive pictures of that were all from people with smartphones on ferries.
Yeah. There's a business built around Storyful verifies this social news content.
Oh.
That's what Didn't they, Storyful so then die? They can,
Storyful no, 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 died.
Storyful died. Right. This is Storyful.
I understand your confusion.
Storyful was bought by News Corp, which some might consider a death, but that's just a joke.
I did say you would get to pick your own. You want to talk about the follower factory?
Sure.
Great
article.
That
feels like a Jeff story.
On the New York Times on Sunday. And by the way, we are talking on Sunday about also the really nicely done graphical layout on this. The way they, the Times is occasionally will do this with an article, really make it visual. But it's about a company called, was it Davumi, which it sells fake followers. And they talk about fake followers in it. And they even name names. And, you know, what's interesting that some of the people whose names were named have had some consequences from this. So they showed, here's the heat map, for instance, for... oh, here, it's not loaded yet. It uses WebGL, so it's probably not going to work very well. It's working pretty well. You can see how, there it is. This is the heat map. From a chef, Chef Simon, who had a huge number of bots that he paid for, apparently, and admitted to. Who was it that got in trouble?
Yeah.
Oh, Richard Roper. Richard Roper.
Richard Roper. That's right. Richard Roper.
I don't know if that's right.
It's a waste of money. And it's egotistical, but I don't know that it was a firing offense or a suspended.
Did he do it for ego or did he do it because his bosses asked him to get more Twitter followers? I remember.
Or maybe if he got paid bonuses based on following, then maybe that's.
It is definitely the case I've heard from. People who should know that in Hollywood, you can often get much more money for a contract as an actor if you have more Twitter followers. There's a direct correlation, because you're considered to have some market clout and multi-million Twitter. So there's strong incentive for people to boost their followers. I mean,
the ones who really are incented are the so-called influencers who are paid for touting things.
Right. Roper had 225,000 followers.
That's a lot of followers.
That's a lot. I have more than that. I have 600,000. I've never paid.
To be your follower, Leo.
You pay as little as a penny per follower. It's very inexpensive. He had 226,000 followers as of Monday, a drop from 253,000 a year ago. But it's part of this, I think, is Twitter kills followers. And that's the other side of this story. I've been seeing people saying a number of big accounts have lost dramatic numbers of followers in the last few days since that article came out.
What about
Trump's? Roper's punishment was, he's under investigation and the Chicago Sun-Times, his newspaper, will not be publishing any reviews or columns until the until the investigation is complete. I think that is
I guess you could argue that it's like an ethics
misrepresentation
violation, and you want your journalists to be presumably as ethical as possible.
Yeah.
It's unquestionably dumb, but in this range of sins.
So Hillary Rosen, former president of the RIAA and a political commentator, CNN contributor, and I think she worked on the Clinton campaign, paid for 500,000 Twitter followers.
Wow.
I mean, it's humiliating to have this be revealed, you know, because it seems like you're kind of grasping for followers, but I don't know if you should be, I don't know what the punishment should be.
I mean, there's
we all have fake followers. I mean, that's the part of the problem.
Do. Yeah.
You know, I'm sure, you know, half, according to some of these social, you know, follower count sites, half of my followers are fake, which is, you know, not because I paid for them, but they're just, you know, they're bots or spam or whatever.
So did you see the Mark Cuban tweet this last week?
Nope.
So Cuban, Gesundheit, Stacey. She's been so subtle. She's been so subtle. We didn't hear the sneeze or anything, but I just thought it would be nice to say Gesundheit for her. Yes. Nice. So Cuban said, you know, after this, that's it. Everything has to be a verified person. And a lot of us came in and said, no, you got to remember about, and he discussed back with me and others, you have to remember about people who are vulnerable. And having a verified identity is an issue. And he wasn't so much talking about your name, so much as saying it's one per person. And there are some bots that are okay. It's not as simple as saying, I got the solution. Let's just get rid of them.
Have three Twitter accounts.
Facebook should get rid of fake. You have three?
Yeah. Stacey. I manage.
Which
two of them
one
are
is
not
the
active.
Real Stacey?
Well, Giga Stacey is my primary.
Stacey number one or Stacey number two?
No, I have a Leo Laporte, which is my primary one, but I also have a bot called Chief Twit Bot, so it's not a secret. And it tweets out things about, you know, shows and stuff.
I used to have a partial ownership in fake Matthew Ingram.
Fake Matthew Ingram.
We created that at Giga Ohm Forum.
Oh, you did?
Oh, yeah. It was Yanko Rutgers. He came up with the idea, and then we all he gave all of us the account, and we asked his permission.
Oh.
Because we worked with him. We didn't want to be a jerk. He's Canadian. Yeah.
Twitter
begs. You can't be mean to Canadians.
Begs to have multiple accounts created. I had an account for my dog. I had an account for, and then people have created accounts like Leo's hair, Leo's table. You know, there's a lot of accounts out there. Most of them
get bored.
They get bored, as they should, because it's boring.
Yeah. I mean, but I have Stacey on IoT, which I'm not using now, but eventually will. So, you know.
Yeah, it's also a good idea to create accounts to preemptively to keep people from making accounts like Leo Laporte sucks, which I don't own. But I mean,
I could do that for you.
Later. Oh yeah. I had an account for my scale because my scale would tweet my weight.
That's right.
That was a bad idea. Fortunately, the batteries died. That scale. That's too bad. There is no way to replace them. Yeah. And it just stopped working.
So what's the rule? What should the principle be on A, bots, and B, fake accounts?
Stop somebody from following you. You could block them.
Yeah.
So when I get spam, I report it from a bot, a follower. I report it immediately and then block. So that's
no, rule. But I'm asking if you're Twitter.
Oh, Twitter's rule.
What should it be in an ideal world? What would you propose?
Stacey?
Do unto others? No. you guys, can't we all just get along?
Stacey.
I don't know.
I think it's challenging for Twitter. I really do.
I'm not one of those people who hate on Twitter all the time. I get that this is a complex issue. I don't think naming people is right. I mean, having people proactively report bots is good if you actually do something about it.
Intent matters, right? So for Leo to start his Chief Twit Bot is fine. The intent is to inform, and news sites have it and so on. That's fine.
A
bot that's going to give me the weather or going to give me bargains, it's fine. But bots that are there to what are the sins?
Okay, so what would the sins be? Attacking people? Do we want to say misinformation?
Yeah, I think spreading not only creating it, but spreading it, that it's there for the purpose of spreading misinformation.
Okay, I would add obscenity.
Screw that, Stacey.
It's so funny because normally I would be engaged in this conversation. I couldn't care less.
That's because you hate Twitter.
Let Twitter be Twitter. Well, it's not that I hate Twitter, but it's like saying, what should we do about that landfill over there? Should we?
Facebook earnings. How's that?
Yes, I got Facebook earnings. I got a couple of stories still to go. Google Flights is using a little AI. Remember we were saying how AI is going to be in everything? They're going to predict delays and show how bad basic economy fares are in the Google flights. So if you're using Google to do your flight booking, that's great, I think. You'll know, you know, how reliably on time a flight will be based on, you know, previous records. And then, yeah, let's talk about Facebook. Fark Muckerberg. Fark Zuckerberg. Oh, no, never mind. Zark Muckerberg says that showing fewer viral videos on Facebook has reduced, get this, this is why every little knob tweak on Facebook can make a difference, has reduced time spent on Facebook by roughly 50 million hours a day.
What percentage is that?
I don't know, but geez. That's, you know, that's why.
How many users are they at now? 2 billion?
Daily active users. Daily, 1.4 billion.
Okay.
Monthly active users, 2.13 billion.
That's over two now.
Over two.
Wow.
Mobile advertising revenue grew 89%. Jeez. 89%. Capital expenditures, 2.6. Well, who cares how much they spent? How much did you make?
Headcount
up 47%, 25,000.
But it's only 25,000. That's nothing. Small. Compare that to an old newspaper company.
Yeah. Think about what the revenue per employee is on a company like that.
Well, you can figure that out.
Net income for the month, 3 month, for the quarter ending December 31st, 2017, $4.3 billion. For the year, $15.9 billion. That's up 50% over last year.
So divide that by 25,000, will you? Somebody? Chat room?
A lot of money. Their profit is up 56% year over year. 20% over a quarter.
Right?
And he's warning. Not going to stay this way because, you know, we made changes. But by focusing on meaningful connections, says Mr. Zed, our community and businesses will be stronger over the long term. In 2018, we're focused on making sure Facebook isn't just fun to use, but also good for people's well-being and for society. We do this by encouraging meaningful connections between people rather than passive consumption of content.
Content's bad.
Okay. I would like to point out, because Shira Ovide, I don't know how to say her name, I don't know. Pointed this out, and we used to track this at GigaOM because Facebook has a lot of servers. Their CapEx is going up to 14 to 15 billion in 2018. That's more than double what they spent in 2017.
Does that include employees, or is it just
physical? No, that's cap. That's just physical assets.
Capital.
So that's data centers. It should, yes. So like their new data center spending is most of their capital
probably
spending.
Probably all data centers, yeah.
That's a
forecast.
That is a forecast.
That's an investment.
They've got it. I mean, maybe it's more along the lines of wireless as well. You know, because they do have some lovely antenna technologies useful for, Leo, your 5G network.
Yeah, well, I don't want the government to take that over. Which would be worse, government taking it over or Facebook taking it over?
That's the same argument people had about Google Fiber.
Right.
Yeah.
Long may it live.
So I wrote a post. I wrote two posts after the changes. One was my concerns about the changes. Then I wrote another one saying that I think that both Facebook and media are looking at community too shallowly and temporally. And so Facebook's goal is to get more, meaningful engagements between people. And so I obnoxiously edited that and said it should be more meaningful and long-lasting engagements among people, and that they're measuring community, as does media, now based on conversation. And my fear is that we're going to move from clickbait to comment bait. Hey, a lot of people talked about that. I got them to talk about it. It must be good. And that's a very shallow view of community. Community is when you join together to do something together, to act. We lost all the Kiwanis clubs and Rotary clubs of the world. And what can you really start on Facebook that has a deeper version of community? So I'm coming to think that Facebook is very much evolutionary, and that there's another leap to be made in their definition of community. And he talks about it, but the current definition, I think, is rather thin.
Yeah, and it fosters slacktivism.
It can, but it could also, it's like the founding of Meetup. Meetup was inspired by the book Bowling Alone, because people, the clubs were going away, the bowling leagues were going away. We want to get people together in person again. Whether in person or not, I think we want to have a deeper definition of what it means to join with other people in the community. And I think Facebook's trying to get there, but I think there's a big step left.
I would also say that there's also that is one definition of community, but not everybody wants to take action. Some people, even in the world of the Rotary clubs, just wanted to go sit at their neighbor's house and gossip.
Me too.
So
yeah,
not.
But
that
then you know somebody a little deeper.
I don't know.
I like going home alone and playing with my computers and watching TV.
Yeah, well,
that's all I really want.
As an introvert, I'm like,
exactly. And I think I think your daughter's an introvert now.
Yeah, I think everyone in my family is. Yeah.
But here's the funny thing.
I heart introverts.
We're introverts, but what are we doing right now?
We're on TV.
We're presuming that the world cares about what we have to say for 2 hours.
I was talking about this with Lisa yesterday. But what I do is what we do is only apparently extroverted. A lot of performers are introverts. Johnny Carson was famously an introvert, and you say, "Well, how could he be an introvert? He's performing." But performance like this and like what he did is actually more internal than you think.
I like how you just compared yourself to Johnny Carson.
Well, you have a problem.
Da, 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 da.
I wish I were Johnny Carson. I wish I were Johnny Carson. But I think I think Letterman's an introvert. I think a lot of performers.
So say more about what makes it internal.
I'm just telling you the feeling of it. And I don't know what your feeling is when you do it. But, I used to do radio shows with my eyes closed. I don't do it now because we're on camera. But it's really very much, it's not like we're really having a conversation exactly. I don't know. How do you it would seem to be that we were sitting around talking.
But Leo mentally has his eyes closed.
Just in my
he's
head
checked
the whole
out.
Time.
He wants to be home.
I don't know. It's it is an act. Remember, it's an act. It's not performing. Yeah, not considered performing is performance.
Yeah, it's a persona. Like I was talking to a friend of mine after I had given a talk, and he's like, and we went out for drinks afterwards, and we were talking about being introverts, and he's like, no way. I was like, oh, yes way. And he's like, oh, this is your Stacey performance.
Yeah.
And
I was like, oh, yeah.
But that's how you can be speaking in public, I think.
Yes. Yes. I turn it on.
Speaking in public is a better example than this because this is more like a conversation. But if you're on a stage giving a speech, you're actually more alone than if you were in a bar sitting and talking to people. You're really on a stage by yourself.
Like, yeah. Why would I talk to people at a bar?
I know. I could just go home and knit.
Okay. let's see. What else do we have to talk about?
Oh, you want to change the subject, Ms. Introvert?
Well, I just feel like this is probably not engaging.
Nobody cares about our...
Yeah.
It's about us, Stacey. It's about us.
That's because we're introverts.
Yes.
I think we've gone through all the good stories, unless you have something...
good. Then I can use my thing as my tip for y'all.
Yes. Save your thing. Save your thing.
Are you going to order the book that Bill Gates says is his favorite of all time?
So this is an interesting question because Steven Pinker, who's the author of what was it called? Better Angels of Our Nature, which is out and you can order it. And I did order that on Audible so I could listen to it. And then I tweeted that Bill Gates said his favorite book of all time was that. And now Steven Pinker has a new book called Enlightenment Now, which isn't out yet. But will be out soon, and so I haven't been able to order it. But now, it's by the way, the case for reason, science, humanism, and progress. And I gather from reading Gates's blog post that really he's an optimist, right?
He says the
world is better than ever before.
But he gives so much data. This thing is like a college. Like we have it. I read part of it, and I was like, oh my god, no more. It's very dense.
Very dense. So the Enlightenment Now book will be out until February 13th. Yeah, he likes Data. But then I got an email from some people who said that Steven Pinker is an alt-right apologist. So I don't know what that means. But
no, that is actually – so let me confirm that this is actually true. This is actually a fake news.
Oh.
Hold on.
Yeah, it was on some
odd site. He was on a panel, and what they did is – yes.
Yeah, they cut off – they cut a small part of a lecture, and it was an unfair – very unfair cut.
They quoted his quote, often highly literate, highly intelligent people who gravitate to the alt-right.
Yeah, so he was warning about them. Don't underestimate them.
Yes.
Yeah.
But he is not. But yes, the alt-right decided to use that and paint Steven Pinker. Not that his, you know, anyway. Yes. Fake news. Inaction. Influence.
He was at both Davos and DLD, and I didn't get to see him, unfortunately.
So I should read this book?
I think we have to.
Bill Gates' favorite book. Yeah. Well, I got the Better Angels of Our Nature first because that's the one that's available. I'll listen to that. And I almost pre-ordered Enlightenment Now, and then I thought, well, let me listen to the first one, make sure he's not an idiot.
Yeah, I read another one of his that was, what was it?
Because sometimes I read this stuff and I just conclude, oh, the guys. Because this kind of syncretic, kind of stuff, which is merging all of these things into some grand revelation. A lot of times,
Malcolm Gladwell.
Malcolm Gladwell is a good example of that. Yeah,
I can grab my book and show it to you, and you will just be like, "Oh my god!"
Do you have a lot of post-it notes in there?
No, it's just it's like a textbook.
Okay, yeah. Good. I can't wait to listen then.
So I one more quick question. So we're all, I think, loyal here to Audible, as am I, and I listen to Audible. But I'm curious, do you have any reaction to Google finally in play doing audiobooks?
Interesting? Yeah.
And not pricey. It's not a club. It's just discounted books. What do you think?
So Google Books is getting a complete revamp, and one of the things will be the ability to buy audiobooks. But, you know, if you think about it, this isn't that new.
Just odd they didn't have them before.
Yeah, in a way it is. Apple's... has iTunes audiobooks, but they're from Audible. But almost every publisher puts out audiobooks. The thing that makes so you can get Fire and Fury from, you know, Apple, from Audible, from there's one called what is it? Down? Let me see. Downpour, which is another audiobook club. And it has all the same books everybody does. The only thing that it doesn't have is the Audible originals, and I think that's one of the reasons Audible does originals.
And boy, some of those are really. Did you ever listen to the one about
I have it. The Butterfly Effect, John Ronson.
Yeah. Did you listen to it?
Not yet, but I have it.
It's really good.
My problem is I love audiobooks so much I just buy two a month, and then, you know, I don't get to them all.
They stack up, yeah.
They stack up. So this will be interesting. The one reason I think they're doing this is because Amazon's Echo has a huge advantage when it comes to audiobooks. You can listen to your Audible books on it. And Google, none of the Google devices will play audiobooks, but they will now.
Wow. Except for Android Auto, which will take a little time, and they're adding that in.
Yeah. You know, I think the prices will end up being the same. They say now 50% off your first book. But my question, you know, there's things you can do. Amazon, for instance, has, I don't want to download Chrome. Oh, God. Jeez. These companies at Microsoft and Google are just at each other's throat. Come on, use Chrome. Chrome's faster. And then if you launch Edge, it actually showed speed dials. You see, it's faster. You should. But things like Amazon has like flat rate subscriptions and things like, and I'm one, you know, Audible is.
Yeah. Which is a better deal.
Yeah. I'm wondering if Google's going to start, if I'd love to see a price war. The problem is they're all copy protected, which means when you buy it from Google, you have to listen to it from Google.
Yes.
You buy it from Audible. That's one advantage Downpour has. Not some of them are now being copy protected, but a lot of them are not. So you can
listen.
Stacey,
do you do Audible audiobooks?
I like to read. I read fast. I'm a very fast reader, so Audible slows me down.
Yeah, you can listen at 2x or like,
I
still too slow. Huh?
I just
since I have a long drive.
Yeah, anybody's
yeah, and
like
I don't have a commute. That's the other thing.
And
we should also mention Audible as a sponsor of
That's why I mentioned it. Yes, we do. Yeah.
But I do think it's interesting that Google's doing this. And I'll probably say it. It's the same. Yep. The thing is, the point really is, it's the same book. So if you're a Daniel Suarez fan, it's not Audible doesn't record this book. It's recorded by his publisher, Penguin Random House. Audible sells it. Google sells it. Downpour sells it. So, you know.
By the way, the production value of these things has gone way up.
Oh, I love it.
Jeez. Sometimes a little over the top, but generally good.
Yeah. I'm listening. Lisa and I are listening. You know, we like to have a book we listen to together. And we're listening to Stephen Fry read the Sherlock Holmes stories, and it's so.
Oh, that'd be fun!
Yeah, it's a good family. It's a good family listen.
Yeah, we do audio. So we do Audible for car trips.
Yes,
like when we go back. So we listen to Neil Patrick Harris read.
Fun.
Henry Hudgens, I think.
Yeah.
Which is a kid's
book. Your daughter's old. Yeah, Henry Hudgens is great. I think your daughter's old enough for Sherlock Holmes. She's right about that age where you start discovering.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, this is just Google. This is more to me Google versus Amazon. There's a big battle brewing.
It's not brewing. It's happening.
On. It is on,
which is good.
It is on. Let us. Unless you guys have anything else,
I think you did it, boss. I think you went through.
We got them all in there.
What do you think, Stacey?
Yes, I'm so sorry, you guys.
No, you've done very well, Stacey.
And I'm giving caffeine. It's
I would never
problem.
Have known. Never in a million years.
I'm like, what? People are talking to me?
Hello. Why don't you kick things off with your pick of the week and then you can go home?
Then you can collapse.
Yeah.
I can just pop my head down and just go. Okay. Pick of the week is you can now send texts if you have an Android phone using your Madam A.
I've been trying to figure this out. Have you done it?
Yes. It works.
So do you start where?
You go to your Echo app, Madam A's
on
app.
On the phone, okay.
And then you go into the little conversation section. So it's that little thing that looks like a thought bubble.
Yeah, good, okay.
And then you
look, a pop-up. There. Ask you know who to send SMS. So it'll go, it can only, doesn't work with an iPhone yet because Apple has
it
no
does not
API.
Work with an iPhone.
Of course.
So you do that. And
go to my profile.
It takes you your permissions and scroll down.
Allow drop-in, show caller ID, send it. Okay. And it'll send it from my Google Fi phone number, which is kind of funny.
And I can do the same with Yo Google, right?
Yes. So, you've always been able to do that.
Oh, do that, yeah.
You've always
and
been
Siri.
So now I can say, Madam A, text anyone in my contacts. It sends both. And so when you do the message, so I was like, hey, Kevin, did you get this? ? And it sent it perfectly, but it also sends an audio message that you can click on.
Oh, that's cool.
So if you get some weird transcriptions because...
Which also means in the car, it could just play it for you rather than badly...
Yes. Now that only stays around for 24 hours, it says. So I assume that's just not to... And it appears in your SMS, whatever your preferred SMS reader is. So there you go.
Good tip. Mr. Jarvis, Mr. J.
I think we should do this. Google I.O. has been announced for May 8 and Facebook F8 for May 1, which means I'll be making two trips in 2 weeks to California.
Hope you come visit us.
I hope.
That sounds like fun. I don't know if I'll go to Google I.O. again this year.
I was going to say, are you going to broadcast from Google I.O.?
Yeah, we went last year. We had it was terrible.
Fun. We got help from Googlers. And
but the audio was all messed up and... All right, maybe.
Well, you can figure that out.
Yeah, maybe we will. What do you think, Carson? Should we do Google I.O. again this year? It was so boring. The only thing good about it was you and Jason hanging out with you and Jason.
It was fun.
And that Russian programmer who, little did we know, was there to hack the vote. Oh, no, that wasn't last year. He'd already hacked the vote. Actually, remember that? There was a guy in our box from Russia?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah.
I almost asked him. Hey, buddy, can I follow your Twitter feed? Your Twitter feed.
So would you go to F8?
I've never been to F8. I think that would be fun, actually. But I don't know how to get into that. You have to
we can
get media credentials.
Into F8, yeah.
I've never met Zark.
You haven't?
No. And I'm going to call him Sark when I meet him.
I was going to say, now that you've renamed him, maybe he won't invite you.
Sark Muckerberg. Oh, it's not the first time he's heard that, I guarantee you. He went to Harvard, for crying out loud. Everybody at Harvard has a nickname.
Okay.
I used to snort coke with a guy named Dink. Turned out, you know what his, I told this before. I never snorted coke with him. Well, actually, once I did, but I didn't like coke. But I noticed he rolled up a $100 bill to do it at Dink. And his last name was Morgan. And I found out the reason he used Dink is because his first name was JP.
Oh.
Jeez.
Now I'm wondering why he went with hundreds. Get 1,000. Come on, enjoy stuff yourself. So I want to meet Sark. Can you arrange that?
I haven't seen him in a while.
President Sark. My wife's coming in to say, don't say that out loud.
Yeah.
It was a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. It was the one time I did it. I didn't like it.
If you had paid in Bitcoin, the feds could find you.
Think how valuable that would have been. Did you see the great article about the guy who created, this is my pick, just because I didn't have anything else, so I'm going to, coinmarketcap.com. He's a one-man band. It's the something like the top 20 sites on the internet now because everybody's following Bitcoin. But what's really interesting, so this shows you the value of all of your, it has the top 100 cryptocurrencies. And so you could see the market capitalization, the current value, a graph. But at one point, this guy, boy, he's got a lot of ads all of a sudden. They didn't used to have ads on here. That's interesting. At one point, maybe that's because I had an ad blocker. I never saw all these ads. At one point, he decided to delist the Korean exchanges because he felt they were not matching the rest of the world from his charts, and he caused a 10% drop in the value of cryptocurrency all by himself.
Not even trying to.
He didn't tell anybody. Everybody's saying, what happened? Great article. I think it was in the New York Times.
So Bitcoin is down to 10,000.
10,000.
So I'm still ahead, but not by much.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, I think it might be a good time to, unless Lisa wants to spank me publicly. I did ask Stacy if she's in. In South by. It's a go. Can I say the sponsor? Can I say who?
Sure.
Capital One. So we're going to be in the Capital One Pavilion at Antone's. I know, but I thought if you said no, I'd edit it. So it actually is official. So Stacy's going to look and see. She's going to talk to her husband and find out if 9 a.m. on March. Huh? 8. I thought you said 9. We started at 8:30 a.m. Sorry,
but compromise.
Hey, it's 8:30 for you. It's 6:30 for me. So
will you have coffee? But
by then you'll be back on caffeine.
We'll have bagels.
I guarantee
we will have salmon.
No, no,
we
no.
Will have
breakfast tacos. Breakfast.
Breakfast tacos. You
oh,
got
breakfast
it.
Breakfast tacos. Bean and
cheese.
And
a variety
cheese, right?
of hot sauces.
Okay.
I love my tacos. Bean and cheese burritos. And
where would you like your breakfast tacos from?
Oh, you know, if it's an official event, no, I'll be there. I actually get up early. It's not a problem.
But where would you? No, I'm telling you. I'm going to bribe you. Where would you?
Oh, okay.
Also, I will be dining on them as well. I'd like to know where the best breakfast tacos are in Austin.
Well, it depends on what you like. I like Taco Deli.
Taco Deli it is. Just,
and I like their donut sauce. Ooh,
please,
so good.
Please make a note of that.
Their donut sauce?
No, Dona. Or Donna. Oh, Dona.
D-O-N-N-A?
D-O-N-A. Dona with a sauce. Tilde, I think.
Doña.
Doña.
Doña sauce. Doña Maria. All right. Everybody's invited. South by Southwest, Antone's. Antone's, is it on 6th? Is it on 6th?
It's the corner of 6th and Guad? 6th and Colorado?
Hey, if you're in Austin, you just ask anybody, where's Antone's? And they'll tell you.
And they'll go, 6th and Guad? 6th and Quad? 6th and Colorado?
Yeah. And it's going to be early. It's day one of South by Southwest Interactive, and we are going to do a piece on it's 5th and 6th. That doesn't make any sense.
No, I'm looking to see the cross street.
Stevie Ray Vaughan used to play there on a regular basis. He won't be playing there this time. Anton's Ninth Club, first opening on 6th in 1975.
Oh, wait, they moved it.
It's on 5th Street now.
It's on 5th, and is this San Jacinto?
5th and something Lafayette,
Brazos, Trinity. So anyway,
you can find it. It's just down the street from Voodoo Donut. You know what? We're going to have some donuts, too.
And you're right next to the O. Henry Museum
right
in Hilton, Austin. Oh, that's super close, actually. That's really close.
You gotta come.
Yeah, okay.
March, I'll be there. What day did we say? March 9th?
March 9th.
April Friday. 9th. What day did we say?
March. March 9th.
March 9th. Okay. Bleak says he's donning now his gay apparel.
Who was it?
In the chat room.
Oh, I see.
5th and La Vaca.
La Vaca. Oh, the cow.
The cow. La Vaca. Ladies and gentlemen, despite appearances, we actually do try to organize this show to happen around about 1:30 p.m. Pacific on Wednesdays, 4:30 Eastern, 21:30 UTC. Please stop by, join us, watch it live. You can hear all the behind-the-scenes stuff. You can also be in the chat room at irc.twit.tv. Somebody's HD editor says, Stacy, introduce Hatch Chili to Leo and Jeff.
I think it is Hatch chili season, so we can totally do that. It's delicious.
And queso all around.
Oh, my gosh, guys. I got a Google recipes for Mexican cheese dip. And I was like, do they mean queso? And they did.
What else could it be?
There was a great obit online this week where they said that he was not fancy and he refused to eat fancy foods like hummus. So they just called it bean dip for him.
Garbanzo bean dip. Nothing fancy about hummus.
Is there breakfast queso, Stacey?
Queso is an anytime food.
Yes, it's an all-day food, all-day thing.
Oh, I'm like, so queso
Jeff,
is
coming, are you coming to South by?
No.
Well, a pox on you, Jeff. We could have all had the show in the same place, and it would have been in Austin. I would have lured you into the orbit.
It's so cool. I love Austin. I'm actually really glad I missed South by, so I'm really excited about this. We will do that next in a couple months. But meanwhile, we will adjourn this session of This Week in Google. You can watch on demand anytime at twit.tv/twig or subscribe in your favorite podcast appliance. And let me not forget that we are still doing the survey. It helps us once a year. We ask a little bit of our audience. You know, just some information about you. Nothing we're going to, you know, use personally. We do it. We aggregate all the results and no personal identification, no leaks of your email address that would be kept private. It's at twit.tv/survey. Take about 4 minutes. We've shortened it up quite a bit. It helps us understand you better and also helps us explain to advertisers why they should support this show. So a very, very nice thing that you would be doing for us if you would go to twit.tv/survey. And I thank you in advance. Here it is.
I think I'll do it now.
Breakfast queso fundido from Chowhound. Can you smell what Stacy's cooking?
I'm not. To be clear, I am not making queso fundido.
Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week. Twig, on that note, I'm out of here.